Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, just like we did around this time last year, back in late February, we rolled into the Mohegan Sun Convention Facility to spend some time talking with the folks who are part of the growing medical and legal consumer cannabis industry, participating in the 2024 Connecticut Cannabis Expo. So relax, breathe deep, and groove to our chats with the event's founder, Advanced Telemed Gold Coast Farm, the Connecticut Social Equity Council, Connecticut, the Connecticut Cannabis Small Business Association, and the folks from Fat Cat Select Seeds. We'll be right back with today's program right from the floor at the Mohegan Sun Convention Center and the 2024 Connecticut Cannabis Expo right after this message. The Stratford Health Department, the Baldwin Center, Stratford Parents Place, and the Stratford YMCA are excited to announce their Spring Walk and Talk series. Grandparents, parents, caregivers, and providers are encouraged to join in for this enriching multi-generational experience. Lace up your sneakers or hiking shoes, bring your loved ones, and step out as folks walk and engage in health-related conversations. The Walk and Talk sessions will kick off with a 30-minute talking session led by a health professional, allowing participants to ask questions and engage in discussions on important health topics. These events begin May 7th, and for details, you can just call the Stratford Health Department at 203-385-4090 or just reach out through the Health Department website page at townofstratford.com. All right. Well, we are here at Mohegan Sun at the Connecticut Cannabis Expo, and I was able to find Wesley Jenks in person here. He has hosted more than two dozen different types of events of this nature all over the country over the past 20 years. But Wesley, thanks for having us here at the Expo. Your family has been in this business. You were born into the event presentation business, right?
Yeah, my dad started Jenks Productions in 1979, and I was born in 1980. So I kind of grew up being around events, being in big facilities with lots of vendors and lots of people. So when I gravitated towards cannabis in my later teen years, I just had a buddy of mine tell me that I told him I was going to do a cannabis competition and event back when I was a teenager, and I didn't even remember it. But when I came back to work from the business after a brief stint in Florida doing commercial real estate, doing a cannabis event was very high up on my radar, and then just kind of waiting for the right time for the market to be right on the East Coast. And as soon as it was, we executed, and now we're here with our fourth cannabis event in the New England region, and the turnout's been great, and we've been growing every year. More people are coming every year, and it's big business for any market that it's been legalized, and we're sort of the focal point of that here in Connecticut.
So you've obviously found your niche and are working it to great success. Tell us a little bit about how the event that folks are seeing here at Mohegan Sun today has grown and changed since the first time you started this.
Well, actually, to be quite honest, I feel like it's been sort of a stall. You know, it's been very difficult for people to get licensed in the state. So my expectations from year one to now was that the state would double its licensees and we'd see more dispensaries here, more producers, more manufacturers. But the state is really, in my opinion, didn't do it right. And you know, so we're stuck with a lot of the same core vendors that are sort of expanding their footprint, where the additional licensees haven't gotten running, and that's really our core vendor base. So we've seen sort of the same familiar players that have been supporting us from year one, which is fantastic. But I'm optimistic that from this year to next year, there's going to be a gigantic push. You know, we have the social equity people here from the state of Connecticut trying trying to help facilitate some of those licenses getting operational. We do have some new license companies that are here in the show, but it's a lot of ancillary products, you know, a lot of things that are sort of in cannabis, but not
thematic, but not related directly to the business.
Exactly. Those have really been our major support, and those people that keeping the show is as awesome as it's been is those guys. Like, they're basically filling the gaps between the start and where what will hopefully be an event that will, you know, feature hundreds of licensees versus just, you know, 15, maybe 20 at the most right now.
Yeah.
And I just found out from a vendor last year when I was walking the floor, these guys that have provisional licenses, they can't even advertise. So they can't even come to our show even if they wanted to. The state prevents them from advertising, even having a website. So it's been problematic, and you know, any new market, there's a lot of hiccups, but I'm optimistic that going from 2024 to 2025, we're going to see a lot of people get online, and those people are going to have to compete with these big boys that have been doing it for a long time. So they're going to need to be here to promote themselves and show off their products and compete for market share.
Yeah, well, obviously you're in the trade show and event business, but you know a super lot about the market and the audiences and customers that are coming to it, as well as the vendors that serve it. In your opinion, having probably, I'm assuming, at least interacted with, if not traveled all over the country to see other events like this,
sure.
Who's getting it right?
Well,
or more right.
You know, what's funny is every market is so different that it's, you know, what's right for one state won't even work in another state.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, just I'll talk about two of the most successful cannabis events that I have attended personally. So one would be MJ Biz in Las Vegas. So it's a strictly business-to-business conference. You get people from all over the world coming there. You know, I have 600 vendors. It's, you know, at the Las Vegas Convention Center. So very large B2B event, usually tracks 30,000 people.
Yeah, and football fields.
Yes, and it's really like on – it's on a big scale, you know, manufacturing, you know, grow facilities. Like, you're not, you're going there just to do business. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then on the opposite end of that, you have an event like the Emerald Cup, which is in the Emerald Triangle area, like north of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So they've been doing that event for over a decade, doing things that most events can't do, but they sort of just let it slide again because it being in California, they were able to have a consumption event almost from the beginning. So they have the Emerald Cup and it's in conjunction with a trade show. And the whole reason that worked is because that's just what was allowed. So let's take a look at our microcosm here in Connecticut. This event is basically the only one in the state because it's the only facility of any magnitude that will even allow you in. Like, the Connecticut Convention Center won't allow you in still because cannabis, I'm using quotes right now, is deemed a drug, and you know, it's not, it's still not socially accepted. So we're here at the Mohegan Reservation and we have very strict no THC on site policy. Even though cannabis seeds are legal, I was able to sell seeds to my vendors the first 2 years, and now the tribe said no, we don't want to do that. Even though it's technically federally legal, we're on sovereign nation here, so they can make up their own rules. So the point being is it you know, where events vary vastly between state by state because it's just what can you actually do at the event. So that's the long-winded answer to that.
Yeah, and then there's also the speed bump, if you will, or the the huge wall to get over of the federal issue. Do you foresee also in the next year or two that things are going to change at the federal level, depending on what happens maybe in November?
If I'm not anything but honest, I don't think so. And you want to know why the Fed's not going to legalize it? Not enough of their buddies have positioned themselves for their licenses state by state. If they legalize it federally, it's going to open up the floodgates and they're going to make it easy for people to enter. And they don't want market entry to be easy. You know, here in the state of Connecticut, to get a dispensary, you know, you're looking at a $30 million investment. That's not for small business people. That's big business. I don't think that's fair. I don't think it should be like that. I'm a small business owner myself. We're based here in Connecticut. That's what I'm doing here, is trying to support these smaller businesses and help them get operational. And in my opinion, it should be like any business. If you can fill out the correct paperwork and you can get a location and you can get through zoning at the town, you should be able to obtain a license. That's how it is in Massachusetts. That's how it was in Colorado. I don't understand. I do understand why Connecticut's doing it differently. If you really do your homework and you see who's holding a lot of these first licenses, it's sort of the who's who of, you know, Connecticut politicians and big business. And if we're supposed to be capitalism, let's support everyone having a chance and let the cream rise to the crop. And, you know, if you have that much money, you should be able to dominate the market anyway, right?
Yeah.
But what having a freer market's going to allow is those people that are doing it a hell of a lot better can also rise to the top because they got better products, they're able to grow better, and right now it's all big corporate.
Yeah. It's an interesting dichotomy when you see how hard Connecticut is pushing to try to initiate and support and enhance agriculture at every other point on the spectrum.
Yeah, again, I think that falls in line to what I'm saying, is it's like jockeying for position to get those licenses. So it doesn't need to be that difficult.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like, you know, let's take a look at our neighbors to the north, Massachusetts, that have now had rec for 3 years. They have thousands of businesses open. You go get your town host agreement. You go show you file the paperwork that's all organized, and you show you got the capital to start whatever that is. They have all different tiers of licenses, and you go through the process. They go through the however many applications, and they do it in order, and then they issue the licenses in order that they're received.
Yeah.
You know, Connecticut's talking about, oh, well, we're going to do another lottery. Well, do you know what happened in the first lottery? All the equity applicants that put in one application, all the corporations took hundreds of thousands of dollars. The application was like $1,500. So a small guy, like maybe myself as an example, might only be able to put in one or two applications.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these guys came in and put in hundreds of thousands of dollars of applications to get the equity license.
Mm-hmm.
So then they're partnering with an equity applicant, which is great for that one person.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody that would potentially... It shouldn't be a lottery.
Yeah, you're selling 100 tickets to win the Mustang, and you buy
stacked.
98 of them,
exactly.
And then two other people each
perfect
buy one.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Perfect
maybe
analogy.
Maybe they'll win it.
Yeah, maybe they'll win it, but the odds are definitely in the favor of that gamble, and it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
Show. Get a town to say they're okay with your business, get through zoning, put your application fee in, show you have capital and a business plan, and you should be able to get a license. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And the only reason it's not that simple is because of greed. And that's really what it boils down to. Hardcore cannabis people that are here that know and are angry about this. And you can understand, these are people that have been put in jail. You know, and they're like, and they know how to do this better than a corporation because they've been doing it with threat of jail time for decades.
At the mom and pop level.
And now here's their opportunity. It's like, and they're toting equity applications, and they're not giving it to these people. So it pisses off a lot of people, and they know that those people are in the building, and a lot of people can't stand the heat.
Yeah.
You know, and it again. It shouldn't be that way. Everybody should get a fair share at getting into this industry.
Well, before we let you go, you know, folks aren't just coming here to meet the half a dozen or so qualified operators and see all the product and the inventions, the fashions, the art.
Yeah.
They're coming here maybe to learn something.
Correct.
You've got some great speakers on the lineup. What are people coming here to learn about?
We had some great speakers over the weekend. Keynote speakers yesterday were Eric Williams and Meg Sanders, and Eric was actually instrumental at getting medical marijuana passed here in the state of Connecticut. And it's funny, Eric talks a lot about what we're dealing with on the Connecticut state level, which is why they're operating up in Massachusetts. They run a group called Cannabis Montana Provision. So they're here speaking yesterday about where they see the current market for cannabis. Mm-hmm. This year, I'm not looking at my lecture schedule, but we have everything from people like Eric and Meg that could educate the cannabis business people down to the general consumer that's looking to grow their very first plant. Vendors that could teach people how to do the extraction process, and we have prescribing doctors here. I like to simplify it and say we have everything cannabis under the sun at Mohegan Sun. We cover the whole gambit of the space, and it's just a lot of fun and a lot of cool vendors, and it's a good time.
All right, well, I'm going to go in and interview some. Thank you so much. Wesley Jenks with ExpoCanna, ExpoCanna.com.
But right now we have ExpoCanna.com, but ExpoCanna will also get you to our website for all the information about what we're going to have going on for 2025.
Excellent. Wesley, thanks so much for having us, and we'll see you out on the floor.
All right, thanks.
Well, as we move to the main event floor, the first person we bumped into is Michelle Valley with Advanced Telemedicine, and she is here today with a couple of private booths doing medical card exams. And Michelle, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this part of the market doing advanced telemedicine and assisting people with getting their medical certifications.
So thank you so much for stopping by and saying hi. This is a really great event, good turnout. So I am a family nurse practitioner. I own Advanced Telemedicine, which is a primary care practice, and we do all telemedicine visits, convenient, quality, affordable health care. We do see people for sick visits. We accept health insurance. But what we were seeing is a lot of people were asking if we certified for medical marijuana. They had questions because their providers weren't doing it or able to answer their questions. So we saw that there was definitely a need, a gap, between patients desperate for alternative health methods and a lack of education on the healthcare side.
Yeah, I have to say, my own personal experience having throat cancer and then really, really bad side effects from the radiation treatment, I had a number of people suggest, for appetite and such, maybe medical marijuana is an option. And so my very next visit to my oncology team, and I won't say where, but I barely got the words medical marijuana out of my mouth, and they were like, no, that's not for you. And it's, I guess it's unfortunate now, a decade later, when I'm learning so much about the medicinal and therapeutic benefits of a wide range of cannabis substances, including non-intoxicating.
Absolutely. Yeah. You brought up a really good point. So this isn't something that's going to like necessarily replace your medication, but there's over 800 different cannabis products out there. So smoking is just one tiny option. But just like you said, there is something for every symptom. And there is lots of products available that you don't necessarily need to get high. It just can help alleviate some of those symptoms. Like you said, the pain, the appetite. There's ones that are energizing. There's ones that will help you sleep. So it's just a tool to help us live a higher quality life for wellness, to feel better.
Well, give us an example, without getting too patient-specific, about a couple of the more common conditions that you treat with a cannabis product that has no intoxicating effect.
Yep. So there is the whole world of CBD, which was kind of thrown at all of us a few years ago when it became legal, and all of a sudden we saw it everywhere. But a lot of people don't understand how it works, why it works, what's the dosaging. So that's something that we specialize in. People can come to us and we'll help create kind of a custom healthcare plan, because it's not as easy as just going to the pharmacy and getting a one size fits all. This is something that you really have to incorporate into your daily routine, see what works best for you, what you're comfortable with. And if you find that right dose, that right product, it can really make a huge difference.
So let's switch gears and speak to the people who may be suspect of cannabis products, even though they may have even been told, possibly even by someone in the medical field, that it could be a solution. How do you see in the couple of years that the recreational market, or about a little under a couple of years, that the recreational market has been alive in Connecticut, and the decade or so since the medical has been in, how do you see the stigma changing? Hopefully for the better, but you tell me.
So absolutely for the better, because as it becomes more available recreational, more people are open to trying it, to talking about it. So right, square one is education. So once you kind of have an understanding of what it does, how it works, the dosaging, then we can actually find you the right product to get the maximum benefits. It shouldn't be a trial and error kind of thing. It shouldn't be just use what you can get. That those days are gone. It doesn't have to be like that anymore. You can get clean, safe products, know exactly what you're taking, how much you're taking. Yeah. And on the medical side, I tell patients, anyone who's using this for any kind of consistent basis, daily, weekly, whatever, if you're using it consistently for any kind of medical purpose, you really should have a medical card and access to a medical dispensary, because medical dispensaries are held to the same standards by the DCP, Department of Consumer Protection, as any pharmacy. So the way a CVS is ran, the way a Walgreens is ran, is the way a medical dispensary is ran. There has to be a pharmacist behind the counter or a licensed pharmacy technician. So when you walk into these places, you are talking to licensed healthcare professionals and getting medical advice. The recreational sides are held to the same standards as like a liquor store. So there's still rules and laws they have to follow, but there's no formal training required to work behind the counter. So that's where we hear the term bud tender. So I'm sure there's lots of bud tenders that know a lot out there, but they don't necessarily have formal medical training. So a recreational dispensary is perfect for someone like a liquor store. You kind of want to stop in, try it. It's a great place to start. But if you really are looking to maximize the benefits here, going to a medical dispensary is the best bet.
Great. Well, in the last couple of moments that we have with you, Michelle, briefly walk us through the process for an individual who thinks they might want to determine whether or not medical cannabis or some type of cannabis product dispensed through medical consultation might be of help to them. What do they have to go through? What do they need to be able to potentially qualify? How much does it cost and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So many more people than they know qualify now. So that's something I hear all the time. I don't know if I qualify. So just set up an appointment with us. We will go through your medical history. And if you don't qualify, we don't charge for the visit. If you do, we will help you from start to finish so you have that card in your hand. If you go to any provider, just ask them what their training in cannabis is and what they charge. There's no kind of formal fee schedule right now. Insurance does not cover it. So providers are charging across the board all different rates. Mm. We want to make this accessible and affordable. So if you come to Advanced Telemedicine, we're having a promotional rate right now of $89. So you would just come to us. It's a telemedicine visit. You could do it from anywhere. It takes about 15 minutes. It's like a FaceTime call. Mm. And we would walk you through the steps. Again, if you don't qualify, we don't charge, but have the conversation with us and we will make sure that we do that, take the best care of you and send you in the right direction.
So I see 800-835-9812 or advancedtelemedicine.com. And their principal is with us here today at the Connecticut Cannabis Expo at Mohegan Sun, Michelle Valley. Thank you so much for your time and education this morning.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Well, as we continue to meander around the floor here at the third annual Connecticut Cannabis Expo at Mohegan Sun, we have run into a women-owned business called Gold Coast Farm and Garden in North Brantford. One of their two founders is Carrie Ann Mulhern. Carrie Ann, this is your coming out party here today at Mohegan Sun because you're just poised to open.
Yes, it's amazing. The excitement and just the energy about what it is and who we are and what we want to do with this community is just amazing.
So tell me how you chose the road and about the journey to this place where you're about to open your new farm and retail operation.
Well, it's actually a very personal journey. I am sober, and I found my sobriety with the use of cannabis. It happened to be just something that worked with me, and it helped me just kind of clear my mind and get rid of the alcohol and all the toxic, everything that it was doing to my mind and my body and my spirit. I mean, I was an avid smoker before, but really taking it to a different level and finding the spirituality part of it, finding the health benefits of it, and just knowing that it's good for my body. So that's kind of, that's where it started. That has been a journey now. I'm sober 6 years. I've been growing now for the past 4 years on my own. I grow all different kinds of strains. I grow indoor. I also have a few teetering out in the garden that just happened to be there. But yeah, it's a really amazing...
Birds drop seeds
birds
all the time.
All the time. Of course they do. Of course they do. But it's really, it's a community. It's a community of people who have really decided to put cannabis on their list of their medicines. It's a medicine, and it's looked at that way, and it's a very personal journey.
Yeah, and we have had a couple of guests on the program in recent months, also talking about the psilocybin movement and how that is gaining traction. I see you also have some mushroom product as well, but. When we were here last year, we were teetering on the edge of getting to become legal to be able to grow at your own residence. So you guys are obviously positioning yourselves very well to cater to that audience.
Absolutely. I mean, we will love to help anybody as a home grower. I mean, we even help larger businesses out there to grow. But we want to get and we want to start with the everyday user. This is a very personal product, and it takes time to grow it. It takes love, it takes attention, it takes nurturing, and really what you're putting into this plant is what you're going to be getting out of this plant, and it's something that you actually grew yourself. It's something that we want to help everybody to be able to achieve whatever kind of grow they're looking for. At Gold Coast, we will have education classes. We want people to come in. We want people to bring in a leaf and says, I don't know what's going on with my plant. How can you help me? There's no ready available source out there anymore. Now that HTG is gone, Ted is going to be with me up at Gold Coast. And with his knowledge and expertise and with also what I've got in bringing to the table, it's just a really awesome unity of knowledge, but also the same thoughts of what we want to give out to the community.
So let's talk to the people who may have spent the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years just getting what they could get from who they knew and trusted for whatever the effect was that whatever was available to them would do. Now we're at the point, medical has been fairly accessible to those who qualify. Mm-hmm. Now we have the recreational market. So for the people who really have kind of found the niche of what they like and what works for them, now they want to just do it all on their own. That's where you come in.
That's where we come in.
So what is the experience? What are the questions that people need to ask if they want to try to make that leap from the recreational dispensary to just growing the type and strain for the effect and outcome that they want from their cannabis?
So I just want to touch back on something that you said about the medicinal part of it and having your med card. It's very unfortunate that with the situation that we're in, a lot of medicine that has been available to medical patients are not available anymore. Certain strains, RSO oils, a lot of things that were readily available, people cannot get. People are now coming and wanting to grow it themselves because if they can't find it out in the world, they want to grow it.
There's no asparagus in the store.
They want to grow it themselves. Yeah. And by doing that, you can grow whatever strain you feel you need for your medicine. Yeah. You can also just become so connected to the plant that you have that relationship with it, and it's going to also affect you differently. So by having the chance to grow it at home, you're able to yield what you put into it. And you're not going to find a lot of good stuff at dispensaries. I hate to say it, but it's grown in a large grow facility. The cleanliness is not there. There's a lot of mold on the flower that you're buying in the dispensaries. And that's affecting you as a consumer because you're now ingesting mold. So people are getting sicker from what they're taking at the dispensaries. Mm. So if you have the opportunity to do it yourself, please grow it yourself. There's no other way really that you're going to get more benefits out of it. Grow it just like your garden. You enjoy your fruit from your labor. It's
sure.
the same thing.
Exactly.
It's the same
yeah,
thing.
It's just another homegrown garden
it
product.
It is. And we have tents that are available for one plant. And you can grow enough to get you through a good 6 to 8 months, depending on how much you need.
Yeah.
We have tents that you can grow two plants in. They can go in your basement, a spare bedroom, exhaust fans, the lights. We have tent sets ready and available for you.
But most importantly, you can go out and buy a jet, but you can't fly it unless
Correct.
You learn how.
Unless
so
you learn
the
how.
Education end of your business is, I feel, is going to be a critical component of your success.
Absolutely. So, again, we're brand spanking new. We're super pumped to open up our doors in 2 weeks. We're going to start with a grow class during the month of March. We want to get people just interested, getting your seeds ready, thinking about what you want to grow, if you want to do a sativa, an indica, a hybrid. Why are you growing? What ailments? Is it just for your own, medical needs, or is it just because that's where you get your pleasure?
Yeah.
So there's lots of reasons why we grow, but they're all positive.
So how do people learn about you?
So people can learn about us from going to our website, which is Gold Coast Farm and Garden. You could find us there. You can also find us on Instagram. You can find us on Instagram under Gold Coast Farm and Garden as well. We'll be emailing, texting, letting everybody know when we're up and running. But we are super stoked and pumped for this amazing opportunity to just build a community around like-minded people and educating them on what to do and what not to do.
Carrie Ann Mulhern, co-founder of the women-owned Gold Coast Farm and Garden in North Brantford. Look for them to be opening soon. And shouting out my buddy Ted Billett from down the Black Rock section of Bridgeport, who's a worthy partner as well. So thank you, Carrie Ann. Great
you.
To meet you.
Same here. Thank you so much. I really like it.
Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this. Hey there, our friends at Adams House in Shelton are continuing their great work offering grief education and peer support in a home-like setting. Adams House is a safe, healing place for families as they go through an 8-week grief journey, drawing support from their peers and gaining new strategies for dealing with loss. If you'd like to make a difference, consider being part of the next Friends in Grief training program that's beginning May 4th. Moderators and facilitators lead the Helping Hearts Heal programming at Adams House, but pre-registration is required. If you'd like to learn more and register or find out about other volunteer and support opportunities, just go to adamshousect.org.
I can finally put a familiar face to a familiar voice, a former For the People guest, Ginny Ray Clay, fellow Waterburyan, and she is with the Connecticut Social Equity Council. She's the executive director, as a matter of fact, and she just came off stage after doing a talk here at the Connecticut Cannabis Expo. Ginny Ray, so great to see you face to face.
Good to meet you. Good. Thank you.
So briefly, what was your big push in the talk today?
Yep. So today what we did was we did an update on what's going on with the council, and we also wanted to focus a little bit more on workforce development. So our companies are starting to open up. They're looking to hire people. The legislation does require that our companies hire people from disproportionately impacted communities. And so we had company owners that were in the audience today, and we had people who are here just curious about the industry and opportunities that may be available to them. So we spoke to that. We spoke to the companies and how important it is to hire from the communities in which you're going to be located in, how to make those folks happy, how to remove barriers, how to create training opportunities. And then we spoke to those people about getting themselves together to get ready to get into these companies and build a legacy.
Great. What else is cooking on your agenda these days?
So we're really excited right now about our reinvestment opportunities. Through the end of last year, we held community conversations in New Haven, Waterbury, and in Hartford. And we went directly to DIA residents and DIA communities. And we asked them, with the sales tax revenue that we receive from the cannabis industry, how can we reinvest that money in the communities? And so we said to them, what can we do for you? What can we do to help you heal from this war on drugs? And we had some really, really good conversations, very open, very transparent, very passionate. And so what we're doing with the information that we gathered from those and future conversations is we're using it to develop a spending plan, so a reinvestment plan in those DIA communities. So the things that pop to the top are childcare, housing, youth programs, reentry programs, and food insecurities. And so we're going throughout the communities. We're looking to work with some of our state agency partner resources to get funding to the grassroots organizations and into those communities that can address those things that folks told us they really would like more help with.
In your community conversations, were you at all heartened to begin hearing from people in the most affected communities that they either know and believe that the movement to support those communities through this cannabis legalization situation is either beginning to see some light at the end of the tunnel or is actually impacting them? I mean, is there a good feeling that this is the right way to go?
The fact that we actually came to them. So most programs are created and given. You know, someone in some room sits down and they say, okay, this is how we're going to address this issue. We went to the community and we said, how can we help you? What would you like to see us do? And they told us exactly that. They want opportunities in their communities to start businesses, local businesses. They want amenities in communities that just don't exist, where you have a food desert, where you have housing that is not decent, where you have barriers, you know, to employment, such as childcare, affordable childcare, availability of childcare. And so all of those things, people were very open, they were very passionate, very candid, and they were very thankful and heartened that we were in their community talking directly to them.
I bet if you had a nickel for everybody that said, what do you want to hear about my hunger problem for? You're with the Cannabis Council.
That kind of sentiment, right? They said, listen, when we said, what can we do? They said, this is what you can do. They did not hesitate.
Oh, good.
These folks know exactly what they want. These communities know they're hurting. And they know exactly what they would like to see their communities look like.
Oh, okay.
We even had conversations with just youth, just young people. You know, we have kids that are stealing cars. They're dying. There's not enough activities. Sometimes when budgets are cut, it's unfortunately programs for kids, you know, and for the community. And so they were right out there. They were telling us exactly what they would like to see us do. And we're going
to
move towards that.
So, here we are amidst the short session at the State House in Hartford. Anything relevant on their agenda that's tied to the Connecticut Social Equity Council?
The legislature is amazing. They have been truly, truly supportive of all of the work that the council is doing, making sure that our funding is in place so that we can reinvest and we can do the things that they intended for us to do. So in our implementation of the legislation, they are 100% supportive, and they're asking us, what else can we do? What else do we need to do to tweak this legislation to make for better equity in these communities?
So if we were to take the time machine forward to January 1st, 2025, and we say, Ginny Ray, what was the big thing you really wanted to accomplish in 2024 you were either able to make happen or came darn close?
Yeah. So, making sure that our social equity applicants who are owning and operating businesses, that they're good, you know, there's a lot of things that just kind of happen. The legislation is not perfect, but that we would have cleaned up some of those things. You know, you build a house and you go, why did I put that door over there? I should have put that door over here. Or why did I paint that accent wall that color? Yeah. Let's change that. So we're in the process of looking at the legislation and tweaking the things that need to be tweaked and fixing them. And then the other thing, I think in 2025, what we'll be doing is we'll be telling the story of reinvestment and how these communities have changed. We'll be hearing the impact. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good to hear. Well, I'm glad to talk to you, Jenny Ray. Jenny Ray Clay is the executive director of the Connecticut Social Equity Council. You've heard her before on the award-winning For the People. We got a chance to sit down and chat with her here today at the third annual Connecticut Cannabis Expo here at Mohegan Sun. Jenny Ray, we'll be talking to you again.
Thank you. Please do.
Well, here we are on the floor of the third annual Connecticut Cannabis Expo, and I noticed these guys when we were here last year and unfortunately was unable to catch up with them, so I'm so glad to see them here again, John Newton and Kevin
Cranford.
I didn't write it right. John Newton and Kevin Cranford are with us, and their company is called Connecticut. So, Kevin, what's it all about?
Yeah, we are Connecticut. We are a cannabis lifestyle brand and social club celebrating the good stoners of the Nugget State.
And where are you located?
We're all a bunch of stoner friends from Manchester, but live all around the Hartford area.
So tell us a little bit about how you took it from an idea to an actual brand.
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. This was one of my great ideas. I was living in Maryland, and I was about to move back to Connecticut. I'm from Connecticut. And I noticed that people in Maryland have a real love for their flag, but people in Connecticut don't have much love for their flag. So I leaned into that. I found filled the void and took the Connecticut flag and kind of canna branded it, took out the grape leaves and put in cannabis plants, and went from there.
So what's the sort of the social club end of the business?
Yep, we host munchie bunches where we all get a little stoned and go out to eat together. We host hikes where we get a little stoned and go for a hike together. We have a community group. We have a holiday party every year. We hosted the after party for Expo Canna. So we're just about bringing people together.
And how long has this been happening?
We've been around since 2021, so this is our third year.
Tell us how it's grown.
It's grown exponentially. We're around the state now. We're looking to release our hiking schedule this year. We have spots all around the state. We have followers all around the state, so it's just growing.
John Newton, how did you get connected to this wild ride?
Kevin's my brother from another mother since 1996, to age us a little bit. And so we've been at it strong for many years and kind of helped him, you know, bring this dream into reality.
Tell us a little bit about developing, like, the product line that you're selling here. You guys kind of vet and hire your own designers and stuff like that, or do you go to them with the idea already conceived and just ask them to deliver the shirts and scarves and other products here?
Yeah, it's funny because we all wear multiple hats, right? So one of us is production, quality, creative design, right? And so we kind of come together collaboratively and say, hey, this is a good idea. Hey, that's not so great. So it's a team effort, honestly. And at the end of the day, we collaborate, and it's awesome how an idea turns into the product you see here. Yeah.
What are you looking forward to in the next year or two with this organization? Massachusetts Buttercup or something?
Well, if you look, we got the Grass Pike covered and Roe Highland next. So, yeah, we're looking to expand maybe into New England, not just a Connecticut thing. But we do want to set the roots here in Connecticut because, you know, we grew up here. And so we're definitely trying to grow the community towards Hartford area, Manchester area, right? More local homegrown. Because I know the Hamden area, New Haven area has good momentum. So we're trying to take that momentum now towards Hartford and fill that void.
Awesome. Great. John Newton and Kevin Cranford from Connecticut. And Connecticut, how do they find you?
They can go to Connecticut.com or Connecticut on Instagram, CannaCticut.
Thank you, guys. Right here from the floor of the third annual Connecticut Cannabis Expo. Get to know these guys. If you like to hike or socialize, or you just want to wear the brand, they are ready for you. well-stocked and ready to expand into your community. The crowds are starting to pour in, the music's starting to get louder, folks are getting a little bit more friendly, and we're making a new friend here with Ken Bastian. He's the managing director of the Connecticut Cannabis Small Business Alliance. So Kenneth, we got sent over here to talk to you because in talking to Wesley Jenks, who organized this whole expo here today, he's still looking at a situation in Connecticut where the big players certainly have a huge advantage. So it's great to see that there's an organization out there that's trying to work for the mom and pops, the individuals, the little guys, to try to give them a little bit of an opportunity and a little bit of a chance to compete. Is that what it's all about?
Absolutely. So that's what our mission is. We are founded on the premise of having inclusion in the cannabis space for all small businesses. And that's what our nonprofit was formed over. The majority of the funds that we acquire, we're going to be using towards lobbying and fighting for everybody's rights. I don't even get paid for this. Everybody's a volunteer right now. And I bring in the AI portion of this. So we offer AI tools to our members. We design AI tools for businesses for specifically for whatever they do. Not only cannabis, we do everybody. But I am the owner of CT Hemp Shop, and the state has shut me down for the most part for carrying CBD non-psychoactive products. So that, and now they're going to be putting those into dispensaries to be taxed, and it's simply not fair. Everybody can order it on Amazon, no problem, but we can't sell to our neighbor, but they can order from Amazon.
Well, tell folks about the organization itself.
So the organization was founded with 37 members. We are all different, from manufacturers to product labelers. We also have CBD shops, medical professionals, hemp farmers, hemp manufacturers, local seed breeders. So the list goes on and on. Another hat I wear is AI Web Tools LLC, so that's what I do with the company. I build everybody's web AI tools for the company, and I do some of the social media as well, and direct some of the meetings. So
how are you integrating AI into the world of cannabis and the cannabis marketplace?
Yeah, so our AIs are multimodal, so they can talk to you, they can see, so you can take a picture of your plant, and you can get a diagnosis of what's wrong with it if you're growing at home. It will tell you if it's a nutrient deficiency or what nutrient deficiency. It will go on the web and find exactly the products to fix it and tell you if it's far long gone or get rid of it. You can have a pure conversation with it because it is conversational. When you do become a member, you get the ability to, and the power, we do train. I train people to make their own AIs. You do not need to know coding. It is trained by English. So everybody is going to be empowered by our organization. And that's what our mission is, to make the small business compete with the big guys. And we are not laying down, and we're not giving up, and we're going to just empower as many people as we can.
Well, that's good to hear, because when there was a glimmer of bright light there, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, when it looked like Connecticut was going to really take on a leadership role in regards to hemp. And then all of a sudden, excuse the pun, but like unraveled like a cheap sweater, not made of good hemp. you having been involved with and somewhat the victim of the situation here in Connecticut, do you see that the situation around hemp growers can find a place and improve and sustain here in the state?
So the only way forward is to allow a ratio, because they're dead set on changing the laws for high THC hemp product. They've already gone against federal law, so I don't see them changing that pattern. And maybe someone will be able to take that to court, because that is federal law does trump state law. I don't know if they knew that, but that is the way it is. But we honestly just need to come together and make everybody included. And that's just what we're here for. We We just want everybody included. And once that mission is fulfilled, we'll all be able to if I want to be in the cannabis industry, I should be allowed to open a cannabis industry, just like I was allowed to open a hemp shop. That free market of the hemp industry that they just decimated was the free industry. It was, and it did not get people high. Yes, there are a couple loopholes that are being exploited, but they're not even closing those online. And those loopholes, you guys can order online. They even said it. Sorry, but you can't be a business in Connecticut. You have to be one of our guys, one of our corporations.
Well, is there one big circuit breaker item that is set in Hartford right now that, if tripped, could really make a fundamental change for the mom and pops and the individuals and the small the small consortiums that are interested in trying to have equal footing against the big canna industries?
And where we're talking about hemp?
Or cannabis.
Okay, so, well, with the hemp market, yes. If we allow that CBD ratio 20 to 1 or 10 to 1, which is a non-psychoactive, because the amount of CBD, way higher than the THC, it will cancel psychoactivity out. All right, so it makes it non-psychoactive anymore. So even though this tincture right here could have 90 milligrams of THC, if it had that alone, you would get high. But with 2,000 milligrams of CBD, making it a 21 ratio, guess what? It's not high. You could drink that whole bottle and still not be high.
Okay.
So this is the thing. If we allow the non-psychoactive element and let our lawmakers maybe be a little educated on that, our AIs can literally answer those questions for them. And if they choose not to seek that information, that's their own problem, and they shouldn't be in office. But they should be open to the suggestions we're making. We wrote a bill. We literally used AI to rewrite the bill to be fair and inclusive, and we dropped it right in their lap on testimony day.
Okay. Is there a particular group or product line or service among your members here in the Connecticut Cannabis Small Business Alliance that might also benefit who are involved in the recreational or medicinal cannabis industries that are, kind of teetering on the edge of greatness but need a little help from the State House?
Well, that's the whole thing. It answers regulation questions, it answers renewal fee costs, it answers anything that the state comes out with and puts out tomorrow, it would know. It's got live data, the world's data, and it can answer any question, any field, any industry. It's not just contained to cannabis, even though I branded it that way. I've unleashed the strings to literally be able to assist in any tax and anything. So, yeah, I thought, say, do I make it say no, or do I make it do everything? And I said, unlock. So that's what we did.
Very cool. Well, it was great to meet you, and thanks for the information. We're with Kenneth Bastian. He's Managing Director for the Connecticut Cannabis Small Business Alliance, approaching 100 strong membership.
Yep, absolutely.
Here, and how do they find you?
CTCannabisAlliance.org. You can enroll in the membership there and access all our AIs as well.
Great to meet you, Kenneth. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
All right, working the floor here at the Connecticut Cannabis Expo. Ran across some guys from Massachusetts, wanted to help them educate the folks in Connecticut. Travis Thurber's with us with Fat Cat Select Seeds. So Travis, when I was here last year, we were teetering on the edge of Connecticut allowing folks to grow their own legally at home. And so now we're like about 8 or 9 months into it. Maybe some more folks are interested in learning, but It all starts with the seeds, right?
That's right. If you're going to grow at home, you got to have seeds or some type of genetics, whether you start from a clone or from a seed is up to you. But as far as Connecticut being so new, we got a lot of new growers, a lot of people that haven't done it before. So a lot of the popular people have been going towards feminized seeds, which are all female plants, which are really popular, as well as autoflower. Obviously, in Connecticut, with it being so new, the feminization is the most popular topic here. People are unfamiliar with male and female plants and pollination and seed making, so they're all wanting to purchase seeds that are feminized, which will guarantee only female plants producing only bud with no seeds. So we've seen a big rush here in Connecticut with that. I think as people grow more over the years, they'll lean more towards photoperiod seeds because they'll enjoy the better flavors, the more distinct varieties in the seed pools. But as far as right now with the beginning, it's really a novice market here. And also, you know, with Connecticut limiting the indoor grow to only two plants, it really puts a limit on what they can do and how many things they can try and strains they can grow.
So what are a few of the things that people should know to be able to sort of ask the right questions and get off in the right direction when they're dealing with a seed purveyor? Because I guess, you know, there's some competition amongst the seed purveyors. You guys are one of them. Certainly, we've heard some horror stories about clones and seeds that might have been bought at some of these street corner cannabis swap meet type operations. What are a few things people need to be careful about so that they don't get discouraged because they get bad seeds and they have a bad experience?
Well, you gotta, whoever you're buying the seeds from, make sure you're telling them how you're growing, where you're growing, and what type of growing you're doing. That way they can cater the type of seeds and strains towards your particular grow. If you're growing indoors in a tent, you're going to want something that doesn't grow super tall, so it doesn't hit the light, so you're going to want a shorter plant. You're going to want something that probably flowers a little quicker, so you don't have so much time in between grows. So it depends. If you're outdoor, you may want something a little taller that the wind can go through and can blow off the moisture a little bit. So when you ask your grower, you're going to explain to them your grow technique or your plan. And when you go over your plan, you're going to find the right strain that's going to grow right for you.
Is there an ideal type of seed or family of seeds that people might steer toward that are, you know, a little bit more resilient or a little bit more suitable for beginner's success?
You know, you're going to have to trust in your breeder and the person you're buying your seeds from by telling you what the disease and pest resistance is, as well as drought tolerance, heat tolerance. All different strains are different, and whether you're, depending on where you're growing, you might want to cater a strain. If you're growing outdoors, you may want one that's disease and pest resistance, a little drought tolerant, where if you're indoors, you're not really worried about that, so you can kind of have a different strain. But like I said, it's all about talking to the grower, knowing the strains, and knowing and catering to exactly how you're going to grow it.
So before we let you go, tell us a little bit more about Fat Cat. You know, what's your status with it? How did it all get started?
Well, we've been breeding and growing our whole lives, but as soon as it became legal in Massachusetts, we decided to start a commercial seed company. We produced seeds years before that for ourselves for years and years, you know, breeding and growing strains together. And so we've also actually started seed companies before. In the early 2000s, we had a vegetable seed company where we did vegetables. We are on an organic farm, so this is second nature for us. So we've always done these seeds. And so, you know, creating them and putting them on the market for us has been a goal, and, you know, sharing our genetics and sharing the, you know, the basically the fun. You know, it's not all about smoking it. We have a lot of people that are gardeners that just grow for the beauty of the plant. They just want to see a beautiful flower, a great smell, and enjoy it, and maybe even give it away at the end of the year.
And there's a spiritual component to it for some people, right?
Absolutely. The routine of growing and the schedule is really important. It gets you doing things at a certain time and completing projects and moving forward. A lot of vets use it because they're really ingrained in that schedule. So when they have to follow a regimen and a schedule for growing, when it's time to fertilize, change the lights, change the water, it's really easy for them to feel comfortable. So it's really part of the therapy, you know, and everything. And it expands across the whole of everybody, you know.
So how do people find you and learn more about you before the noise starts?
You can get us at fatcatselectseeds.com. You can see us on Instagram at fatcatselectseeds_official. So come check us out and check out our stuff.
Travis Thurber, one of the seed folks here at the Connecticut Cannabis Expo, Fat Cat Select Seeds. Travis, thanks so much. The competition is starting, so I'll turn the mic off. Thank you.
All right, have a good one.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.